Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. We're going to be hosting a live seminar. It's going to be held by video on June 19th. That's Wednesday, June 19th. It'll be 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be 90 minutes. This first seminar is hosted by Amgen. We're going to have three different team members with three different roles, with three different backgrounds, all veterans on the live panel. And just like on the show, I'm going to do 45 minutes of Q&A with the three of them. And then we're going to take 45 minutes and open it up to the audience to answer any and all questions that you have. If you have any interest whatsoever in about Amgen, about the biotech and medical services industry, about functional roles that are universal across every industry, I'd really encourage you to join. I would love to see you there, add some faces to some names, and have your participation. I think you're going to learn a lot, and we're very, very excited to kick this off. And also very grateful for Amgen's support, because by sponsoring this panel, they're helping us expand our work over here at Beyond the Uniform. And all of this is 100% free for you to join. So costs nothing. You can register through our newsletter, or look for a link on the site. Hope to see you there. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Messiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 279 with Natalie Oliverio.
It's really important to come from a mindset of want, not need. I have been in so many interviews where I felt like, oh my God, I need this job. This is the only job for me. This is for my life path. I absolutely have to get this job because it's going to pay me X dollars. And then I went into the interview with so much pressure, and all I was thinking about the money. And I think I even led with money in an interview, which is like rule number one, don't do it. And I was just not myself. I was a shell of myself. I was not confident, not competent, and anxious. And that is, that's a recipe for disaster in an interview. So when you forget the need, no matter how bad you really do need this job, in your brain, this is something that you want.
Natalie helps military personnel realize their potential and define their professional goals. She partners with companies that are ready to hire veterans and acts as a broker to make sure that both the veteran and the company are happy. In this interview, she shares an immense amount of wisdom she's learned in helping veterans. We talk about mentorship, we talk about mindset, and a variety of topics applicable to veterans in any career path. As always, at beyonduniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss. You'll also find a link where you can leave a review for Beyond the Uniform on iTunes. And special thanks, blast to the past, back in 2018 May, our very own Steve Bain wrote on iTunes, "This podcast is a must-listen for any service member, regardless of where you are in your career timeline. At some point, we all transition, and Justin's interviews offer transition advice, resources, potential careers, tips, networking advice, interview techniques, branding, etc. I recommend this podcast as a must-listen to fellow vets I mentor through their own transition. Thank you, Justin." Thank you, Steve, and thanks to all of you who have left reviews on iTunes. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Natalie. Joining me today in Morgantown, West Virginia, my guest is Natalie Oliverio. Oliverio. I got it right that time. Natalie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Justin. I'm so excited to be with you this afternoon.
So listeners should know that Natalie is the founder and CEO of Military Talent Partners, which provides mentorship, coaching, and career discovery to help military talent realize their full potential and define their professional goals. She served in the Navy for 4 years as a journalist and spent 10 years in corporate recruiting and 3 years volunteering in professional mentorship among the military community. So maybe, Natalie, to start things off, can you talk us through your own career transition and what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. I really thought that I had nothing to worry about. I was going to roll right out of my active duty, and I was going to hit college, and I was going to be, you know, this big success, no big deal, right? Because I had already come through the military, and there's nothing harder than that. Only when I thought I had completely figured out, I was really clueless. I was basically laughed out of the journalism school. they were like, there's nothing for us to teach you. You need to pick something else. Like hardcore, this old Marine veteran was the dean of the school. He's like, get out of here. You're going to waste your GI Bill.
Wow.
So I ended up picking human resources because the whole reason why I love journalism in the first place is helping people to have a voice. And so I had always loved being a part of people finding what they truly love. And I was lucky enough to find that passion through HR and turning it into talent acquisition recruiting. So after I graduated, which was really hard because coming back to English 101 as a 24-year-old, sitting around a bunch of 18-year-olds, it's 2005, it's so close to 9/11. Mm. They didn't know how to talk to me and I didn't know how to talk to them. And it just made me feel very insecure. And what I would really equate my military transition, once I started working in the corporate world, it felt like I had been held back a few years in school. It's almost like I mentally thought time would stand still. And when I came out of the military, I would just be equal with everybody else. But I wasn't. I was held back to some extent because everybody else had already gone to school and gotten a good job. And now they're in management and I'm just this new kid. Mm. And it just did not feel right.
I love that. I always think of one of the first interviews I did with this guy, Britt Young, who worked at the time at Palantir. He said, you know, my assumption was that everyone else, I was in the military and they were just out there playing Lincoln Logs. They were just kind of killing time. He's like, they weren't. They were working hard. They were going to school. They were learning their craft. And what you're saying is pretty common, of that sense of feeling a little bit behind or feeling like there's some catching up to do. Or feeling like, hey, I've learned a ton of really valuable skills in the military, and there's a lot for me to learn on the outside to aid in that transition.
Absolutely right. And you just don't think of it that way, because while there's that big gap of people already moving ahead, you are doing something incredibly meaningful and important. It's just so different from the civilian lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So everything that you're doing and all that you've learned and accomplished, you start to feel like it doesn't matter. It doesn't count for anything. How the hell do you translate what you did when all of these other people who are quote unquote your peers are on a completely different level than you are?
Yep.
And for many of us transitioning out, that is the thing that shakes us the most. Not only do we not understand our new identity as a veteran, we don't really understand what our purpose is, what our next mission is, but we're surrounded by other people who we used to consider our equals, only now they're exceptionally outperforming us.
That's so true. And I think that has been a trend, this lack of purpose, this lack of identity. But you're hitting on something I haven't heard a lot of, which strikes me as true too, which is it's not just a loss of purpose and loss of identity. It is then a new, I would even say it's kind of like a new peer set. It's a new set of peers against which you're comparing yourself, and they stand out as ahead in many ways. And that can be really unsettling to be in a new environment, maybe feeling like you were at the top in the military or knew what was going on and knew the environment, and then to be thrust in this completely new landscape and to feel like you're behind or you don't really know what's going on. Which also I'll add is exactly how that civilian would feel if they were plopped in the middle of a ship or Afghanistan or a squadron. Like, they would feel equally confused about what to do.
You're absolutely right. And I think that either way, understanding what's ahead, planning for what's ahead, and really commanding your own success post-transition is even more critical now more than ever, mm-hmm. because there are so many resources more than ever before to take advantage of, to really help you leverage your strengths and start that conversation early, right? Mm-hmm. Even before you go into the military, what do you want? What are your goals for being in the military? And when your service is over, what are your goals for after?
Yeah.
Thinking about it through the whole way. And we don't do that. We're just so focused on getting through our duty and our service and getting through our tours that we aren't thinking about what comes next or who we are, or what we want to do. But for many of us, for the first time in our adult life, now we're able to shape our own identity, choose what we want to do, and go out and get it. Mm-hmm. But we're only used to being told what that is, giving directions to follow to get there, and a path of people who are going to help make it happen.
That's great. That's great. Well, tell me, maybe let's jump ahead a little bit. And let's say you bumped into someone today who's currently on active duty And they said, Natalie, what do you do for a living? How would you explain the work that you're doing right now?
What I do at Military Talent Partners is help connect people to meaningful careers, help to start that conversation about what's next for you, how can we help you get there? And mentorship is such a major piece of that. And I always ask people, do you have a mentor? Who's your mentor? A lot of them will say, yes, oh, I have a mentor. You know, they're my NCO. That's not a mentor. That's not the same kind of mentor that you need. You need someone on the civilian side who's been there for a while, who has potentially been through their own transition, who can really see the other side and help you see things that are not in your immediate line of sight. So I lead people to mentorship through mentorship, and I help match people's potential to meaningful careers.
That's great. I mean, I'm a big fan. You're speaking my language. One of the things that's on our website is success leaves clues. And I'm a big fan of, like, you know, there you can learn by doing, or you can learn by and making your own mistakes, or you can learn from the mistakes of others. And oftentimes in these mentor relationships, they're dispensing, in my own experience at least, they're dispensing these nuggets of truth, this gold. And you realize after a time that each of these pieces of gold is earned through a lot of scars, a lot of mistakes, a lot of battle wounds that cause them to learn something. And what an efficient way to learn. How does that work? Like, how do you, let's say someone listening wants to get involved. How do they start? Could you take us maybe through the flow of they go to your website, they reach out? What does that process look like?
The easiest thing to do is to go to our website. Military Talent Partners has three different verticals that really all work together. First and foremost, it's career placement. We partner with companies across the country who are military ready, not necessarily military friendly. We are not in the business of press releases and fluff pieces. We want to work with people who are military ready. So in order for an employer to partner with us to hire military talent, they have to be ready to hire veterans and military spouses. They have to have excellent compensation and benefits packages. They have to have a stellar corporate culture and working environment so that we know any veteran or spouse we put into that company is going to have everything they need to be happy and successful. So although we are a very scrappy new startup, we turn down companies all the time because, believe it or not, many are not in it for the right reasons. And that's the whole reason why I started this company. I wanted to do the right things right and not have to ask permission.
That's great. How do you tell if the culture is right? Because I know that so many listeners, I imagine that the culture, that they're coming from a very strong team environment. And a lot of people I know in the military, they really prize their colleagues and that camaraderie. So I imagine they really want to work in that stellar environment you're talking about. They want to go to a place that is going to be a good cultural fit. How do you tease that out, or how do you figure out if that is a good part of an organization?
I personally vet the companies that we partner with. I talk with their leadership. I talk with employees who work there. And then we also do our own internal research. So we'll dig up stuff on the company. We'll read the reviews that are out there. And we'll talk to people on LinkedIn, for example, who work there. What do you like about working there? What was it like when you got hired? Are things different now? Is there promotion potential? Do you feel that you're valued and appreciated? And those conversations are what really uncovers the most information because no one really understands or realizes that we're doing it. Mm-hmm. But we're talking to people every single day, figuring out, why do you like to work for this company? What's it really like on the inside? What kind of advice do you have for someone coming in? That way we can make a good judgment, because we don't want Military Talent Partners to be associated with any type of organization that isn't going to absolutely every single time do the right thing for that veteran or spouse.
That's great. And I think for listeners, the process you're talking through, I love the scrutiny that you're applying, that you're not just taking it at the face value of the person who does the hiring. You're talking to people who have worked there, maybe even more importantly, people who used to work there. You're really getting the holistic picture of what it's like to be at that organization. And I think for listeners, that's a good process to take on for yourself when you're considering a new job. But I love this thought of the Military Talent Partners being that screen. Like, one of the value adds is you're figuring out who is a good fit and who isn't. And that's a lot of heavy lifting to do for the job seeker.
It is. And so for the business, we act as an internal talent partner. So every veteran or spouse that's going to get submitted to that company for consideration, we're screening, we're vetting them. So we're vetting on both sides. It's a very much a mutual relationship between organization and candidate. And we're there to broker that deal to make sure that everybody involved is going to walk away really happy. It does not work any other way. That's when you have retention issues, high turnover problems. You have veterans leaving 6 months later, starting at square one because they're not happy and it's not what they thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. So we do this work to make sure that that doesn't happen.
And I imagine, well, actually, before I move on, so you said there's a couple different parts and I kind of cut you off. So one of them is career placement. What are the other two?
The biggest part, of course, is career placement. We partner with companies to help them hire military talent, veterans, and military spouses. And then the second one is we offer free mentorship for anybody who wants it. We partner with some of the absolute best mentorship organizations like Veterati, like American Corporate Partners, like Elite Meat, and the Travis Mannion Foundation to make sure that every service member, spouse, veteran, and Gold Star family member gets access to free mentorship. And then the third vertical is an executive coaching program. It's a paid career accelerator, all online. It's meant to be an extension of TAP class, except for it's everything you need to know to make a career transition. I'm talking cradle to grave, full life cycle. What do you want to do next and why? Let us help you create your new identity. We'll teach you how to interview, how to write this in a resume, how to write it on your LinkedIn profile, how to network with people, how to negotiate your job offer, and what kind of salary expectations should you have. So we help cover all of this. So when people are preparing for their own transition, there is no room for anything less than 100% success.
That's great. That's great. I love that. So the free mentorship, career placement, executive coaching. So one of the things that I wanted to ask about is you've seen thousands in your career, thousands of different transitions. Are there any common mistakes that you see people from a military background make in that transition?
Absolutely. Never starting early enough. There are people who start 30 days out, 6 weeks out, and it's just not enough time.
Yep.
And people who don't understand the value of a mentor. So they're making all the decisions with half of the information they should have.
Yep.
Only the military side of it. And they're skipping all that value added by a mentor that they can trust.
Yep.
There is an absolute sea of advice out there, especially on LinkedIn. Everybody thinks they know what's right for you and what you should be doing and what's most important. But no one can really make that call but you. So if you ask 100 people about your resume, you'll get 100 different answers, and that can make you crazy. So having a mentor, someone you can trust and rely on, cuts all of that noise out and leads you to what the right decision is for you. When you understand what your identity is, you start creating goals. When you know what your goals are, you know how to articulate your ask. But all of these things sound really simple, but they're very difficult because our minds are not driven that way in the military. We're mission focused. We're thinking about our team. We're thinking about everybody else before ourselves. When you transition, you have to put your oxygen mask on first, mm-hmm. or you won't make it.
I love that. I mean, I think that one of the trends or one of the kind of tenets that I really like is this thought that I think that most veterans do a poor job advocating for themselves, putting themselves first. It's a big transition point from active duty. And I love that you're saying that. I know that's an overused metaphor, but it's very true. The thought of putting your oxygen mask on first, taking care of yourself and your family's need, which is a very big cultural shift for most listeners. And then I also love that thought of there is so much noise out there. There are so many people claiming to have all the answers and to be able to take you through these things. And so I love that thought of using that mentor as a trusted advisor, a trusted source to slice through a lot of that noise and to bring simplicity to what can, even for me, be an overwhelming process.
Absolutely. And I have mentored hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. And while some common threads exist, everybody's different. You have to be able to meet people where they are. Just like in business, we don't have an off-the-shelf talent solution. We don't use fancy algorithms or big, impressive databases. We use people on people because that's how we believe we get the best match,
yep,
the best intention. And it's old school and it takes a lot more time and it's a heavier lift, but those things also mean it's the right thing to do. So you have to have the right thing in place, regardless of what it is.
That's great. And I think that's true. It is, everyone is unique in terms of who they are and what their aspirations are for them and their family. So I love the thought of the individual attention, really getting to know them and finding what's right for them, which is different than what would be right for me or the person giving the advice. I'm wondering, any tactical advice for listeners around resumes and anything you've seen that they could do better or think about as they're thinking of their resume?
I have never heard a word that can scare people more than the word resume, because they're so intimidated by it. But resumes don't get you jobs. A resume is like buying a ticket to a ball game. You'll get into the ball game, but you have no control over, you know, who's going to win, how many points will be scored, if you'll have a good time, if you'll like it. But I would say a resume, first of all, the word resume means summary. Mm-hmm. It's just a summary. It's a highlight. You don't have to pour your entire life into the page. Less is more. You have 6 seconds or less to make an impression. So you have to think about your highest and best value, the most impact you can make in the most concise way. You need a lot of breathing room, a lot of white space. Focus on your biggest and best accomplishments, not your day-to-day duties and responsibilities. Anybody could read that in a job description. What did you do in that role or when you were at that command that was unique, that stuck out? How are you unique? How are you special? How are you different? Make that shine in your resume. You'll get so much more attention. People will be compelled to want to know more about you, and it will open up a bigger conversation in an interview.
That's great. And I imagine those mentors are helpful at providing the maybe individual feedback on people's resumes and making sure it's not using too much military jargon as easily understood by someone outside of the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every sentence should start with a power verb, like managed, created, orchestrated, cultivated, led. Every section of work experience should not have any more than 3 bullets. When you think about a 20-year military career, and then you're expected to turn it into 3 bullets, that could be like polarizing, like, oh my God, I can't do this. I'm never going to have a good resume. I'm failing already. When really, you don't have to talk about your 20 years. Just talk about the 3 biggest things in that one role that you're most likely to be remembered for, or that you want to be remembered for, so that whoever is consuming that information on this page is impressed and they want to talk about it more with you.
I think that's great. I do a lot of consulting work and help people on the civilian side with their resumes sometimes. And I was just working with this guy. He has 20 years of experience in technology, and it was like a 4-page resume. And it's like, man, I love what you're saying about the 3 bullets, because it's like, man, no one's going to look through this. In the 6 seconds, all I do in 6 seconds is get overwhelmed by 4 pages of information. Like, are you former president of the United States? Like, who is this person, you know? And so it's like really doing the heavy lifting and spoon feeding, saying, these are the top 3 things I accomplished. These are the most important. And that's I agree with you. I think that's what captures people's attention. It's like, okay, show me the 3 most impressive things, or show me the 3 things that make you most unique and stand apart. That's what I want to do, rather than wade through a novel of who you are and what you're about.
You're absolutely right. Imagine when you pick up this resume, or 1 or 2 pages, please God, no more than 2 pages. But when you pick it up and there's so many words on that page and everything's squished in, the margins are tight because you have to tell this amazing, elaborate story. Imagine the sun at like the peak of the sunset, like just glaring in your eye, and you just like want to look away. That's how that text feels to a recruiter or a hiring manager or anybody, because it's so unattractive that they want to look away, and they will. So it doesn't matter how beautiful the story is if no one's going to read it.
Yeah. And I, you know, maybe this is not as big of a pain point for people in the military, but I always shy away from those generic things. Like, I am an agent of change. It's like, what does that even mean? And like, how is, you know, everyone claims to do that, but like, show me the proof. You know, I'd much rather see someone who said, hey, I led a watch team responsible for the safety of a $1 billion submarine and was named the number one, number one senior enlisted person out of 50. I'm like, wow, I don't know what that is, but rated one out of 50, that's pretty good. That's like the numbers are the universal language, and showing concretely objective, anything like that is really helpful to let people get a toehold in and understanding what you did.
You're so right. Metrics are resume gold. Mm. If I had a dollar for every time I read results-driven professional, you and I would be doing this podcast for my private audience. And I can promise you, being a results-driven professional, which is, by the way, totally assumed, mm-hmm. because nobody goes to do a job without wanting to get a result. It's horrible. It's like resume suicide. Do not write results-oriented professional. Talk about the results. Talk about what you did. Quantify your experience with metrics, with numbers, with results. Don't just say you get results, because that doesn't matter to anybody.
I totally agree. And it's like the show don't tell mentality. It's like, if you're results oriented, show me some results. And for listeners, I know that can be tough to do. I'm curious, Natalie, if you agree with this, but it's my advice is usually these resumes are, they are conversation pieces if you actually get the interview. And it's not, I think that a lot of people I talk to are so worried about the quantifiable accuracy of what they're doing. And as an example, my submarine did a refit, and I'm going to blank on the exact numbers, but basically we had our nuclear reactor replaced while I was on board. And so I said, hey, my engineer went away, and I acted as engineer for a 3-week period for a $500 million overhaul. And that $500 number was the one where I went to the engineer and I said, hey, Eng, roughly how much does this thing cost? It's about $500 million. It wasn't like you have to build up footnotes and citations. I think there's a lot of fear when we talk about being objective and numeric. There's a fear of like, well, I don't actually know. So it's kind of like, it's sometimes an approximation, and it's not like you're going to have fact checkers here. As long as the intention is to be as accurate as possible, you can round these things up to be able to make it more numeric. But the point is to have something that's objective. You know, if you are the number one junior officer on your boat, great. How many people were considered? 13. Great. Number one out of 13. Hey, you got, you were recognized as the best ship. How many ships were considered? Okay. You were in the top 10% of 50 ships. Just trying to make things a little bit more understandable from the 10,000 foot view.
Well said. I totally agree.
What about, you mentioned negotiation, and that's something I don't think we've actually talked about much on the show. Is there any advice you have? Because I'm thinking, you talked about how, and I agree, many of us really struggle to advocate for ourselves. Negotiation maybe is the epitome of advocating for yourself. Do you have any insights or thoughts on how a veteran might approach negotiation around a salary or position or anything like that?
First and foremost, you have to understand your needs. And some advice that I often give is, when it comes to salary, you need to know your numbers. So how much money do you actually need to make to pay your bills, to sustain your quality of life? You're no longer going to be getting BAH. That's really also not a factor into your salary, because that's kind of a perk from the military. Like, the real world doesn't give you, the real world, the civilian world doesn't give you BAH, right? But that is a factor, because now that's a different cost. So how much money do you need to be happy? How much money do you need to pay your bills and to maintain your quality of life? That is your real bottom number, but you never tell anyone that bottom number, because you pad it, depending on the scope of work, by 5 to 10K. If it is an individual contributor role, you're going to want to pad it by 5K. If you're going for a manager or above role, pad it by 10K. So let's say your real bottom is 50K. You're going to say, I'm looking for a salary in the range of 55 to 65K. There you've padded it by 5K, but you've added a 10K range. So even if they come back at 55K, you're above your actual minimum, and you're going to be happy. here's what happens if you don't do that. If you're honest, you're like, well, you know, I really just need 45 to 50. Knowing that you need 50 and you come back and get an offer at 45 or 47 and you're not happy, then you're going to frustrate the recruiter who you had a conversation with that you sure 45 was good. And you're going to frustrate the business, which makes the negotiation a little bit clunky. You want to be as transparent as possible, but also that bottom number is nobody's business. Your military retirement, nobody's business. That does not get factored in. Where that does take play is you want to think about the scope of work of your new job. What does Glassdoor say you should be paid for doing this work? What does other research via the internet say you should be paid based on the scope of work, your years of experience, and education? These are other market factors to look at over and above what you need to make. But the key is to understand your numbers and then to keep the bottom number to yourself. Pad it by 5 to 10K. Pad it 5 to 10K and then add the 10K range on top of that, depending on manager or below. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. I haven't heard that before, but I think that's very tangible for listeners. And one thing that I'll just add for myself is I always have this fear of, you talked about knowing yourself. I always have this fear of putting stakes in the ground and saying, this is what I want. This is what I'm looking for. And I look back, I look back in my days of dating. I think back in my history in selling as an entrepreneur. I think back in my consulting work. There are so many times where my intention was, I need to get this. I need to get this person I'm on a date with to like me. I need to get this contract. I need to get this client. And every time that I've just been clear of like, this is who I am and this is what I want, it makes it a depressured thing, because it's like, look, I'm looking for exactly this. If that's not you, if that's not your company, great. Let's save ourselves some time. Let's save ourselves some heartache rather than trying to squeeze into everything. And so for listeners, it may be uncomfortable to set that range. Hey, I'm looking for X to Y in salary. I'm looking for this title. I'm looking for this geographic location. But know that doing that limitation, setting those limits, it's going to maximize the chance that you find exactly what you want, rather than accepting something that's not going to work for you or the employer because you're not happy.
That is so true. And along those lines, it's really important to come from a mindset of want, not need. I have been in so many interviews where I felt like, oh my God, I need this job. This is the only job for me. This is for my life path. I absolutely have to get this job because it's going to pay me X dollars. And then I went into the interview with so much pressure and all I was thinking about the money. And I think I even led with money in an interview, which is like rule number one, don't do it. And I was just not myself. I was a shell of myself. I was not confident, not competent, and anxious. And that's a recipe for disaster in an interview. So when you forget the need, no matter how bad you really do need this job, in your brain, this is something that you want. And it's really important to get comfortable with your identity so that you're more confident, because you should be presenting yourself like you have done this for a million years. This is old hat, second nature, because you're a pro. And when you believe that and you portray yourself in that light, everybody you're talking with is going to feel that about you too. And at the end of that interview, they're not going to remember things that you say. They're going to remember how you made them feel about you. So if you exude that confidence and you come from a mindset of want, not need, it totally changes the game.
I'm a big fan of the quote. It's for entrepreneurship, but it's that entrepreneurship is 90% psychology and 10% skills, which has very much been true in my own experience. And I love what you're saying, because the confidence aspect, the way that you handle yourself, and that confidence, I know listeners know this, but it's like that confidence comes through in your voice, in your gestures, in your posture, in your smile, in your face, in a million ways that the hiring manager is either consciously or subconsciously noticing all these thousands of things that they're picking up. And I think that that circles back to one of the core foundations of what you're doing at Military Talent Partners. The purpose of that mentorship, the purpose of this training is to help you get to know what you want, having clarity about what your objectives are, having clarity about your values and what you have to offer. And if you do that heavy lifting up front, if you really do that, take the time to get to know that, that's someone who's going to show up in an interview confident because they know what they know where they're going. They know what they have to offer. And then the interview, it's strictly, it's two ways. The interview is them evaluating the employer. Does this person meet with where I'm going? Does this person match with what I want? It's completely different. And again, not to overuse the analogy, I think of all the dates that I went on where I'm doing all my stupid stuff to try to get this person to like me versus the dates I went on where it's like, this is who I am. And if that's not of interest to this person, then that's fine. That's great. There's so many people out there. It's a completely different way of showing up. And I just love that you're underscoring the importance of confidence. It's not something I hear a lot on the show, but I think it's very, very true.
Oh, confidence is everything. It is a total game changer. Yeah. I work with people all the time in the way they behave on phone interviews. If you're being interviewed and your responses sound like, yeah, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years. I've been leading X number of people and I've been responsible for millions of dollars on prop. Nobody wants to listen to that. If you're like, I have been leading 25 people for the past 6 months. I've been responsible for $3 million worth of equipment. And we did this that led to this challenge, but I chose to do this. And this was the outcome. It completely changes your voice. They can't see that you're smiling and you probably look silly, but you sound amazing and you sound confident and you sound like somebody they want to talk to. That's the whole point. You want to have that approachability and that attraction, not a physical attraction, but they want to feel like they like who they're talking to, that they want to hear more. Otherwise, you're probably not going to make it to the in-person interview.
And what I appreciate about that is I think that most people in the military, they spike, they do really well in relationships. These are people who have had long watches in the middle of the night, having to come up with conversations, having to, you know, relate to different people, whether you realize it a lot or not, if you served in the military, you're probably pretty good at connecting with people. And sometimes I think that people from the military lose that when they go into this foreign environment of an interview and they get nervous or I don't know what happens, but they lose that ability to be relatable and to connect. And so what I love about what you're talking about is just thinking about the presentation, thinking about the shiny wrapper that goes around you when you go into an interview and making sure that just like you want to sit next to someone on an airplane, just like you want to stay up on the mid-watch with someone for 8 hours from midnight till 8 a.m., like be that person in an interview. You know, don't be afraid to be that interesting person and to really let your personality show through.
Absolutely. I mean, this is your opportunity to show them who you are, the best part of you that's going to be a major value to the organization. So being too buttoned up or stiff and being too anxious or coming from a place of need, because you need to transition, you need to be successful, you need to get this job, or what are you going to tell people? Those are all things that will crush who you really are and crush that potential that you absolutely have. But coming from that place of want and that place of being your best is going to get you so much further.
I know we're getting short on time, but one other thought I had was, we've talked about resumes, we've talked about interviewing, and I know that the military talent partners, you do a good job of vetting potential employers. But one question I have is, do you have any advice for someone in figuring out what they want? We've talked about the importance of knowing your numbers and self-knowledge, but for someone coming out of the military who might not know, man, there's finance, there's sales, there's medical devices, there's healthcare, there's technology, there's so many options. Do you have any thoughts on how to narrow that down or how to make that more manageable?
I do. And here's how we kind of tackle that. For us, everything starts with why. What is your why? What drives you? What's your purpose? That is the focal point of everything. And we work with people extensively to help them find their why. We're huge Simon Sinek fans. And we believe in his philosophy and his teaching of finding your why. So all things with us start with why. Then it's creating that new identity and building your personal brand. Thinking of your career as a movie, your post-military career as a movie. What's happening in the end of that movie? What have you accomplished? How's the movie end? Who's around you? What are your goals? You have to visualize these things before you can really answer who you want to work for and what do you want to do. What's important to you? Because this is the first time in your adult life, most likely, that you're able to make these decisions for yourself. And oftentimes, it's not what you've done in the military. But as anyone who's served knows, you do 100 different things in the military that you could pivot and leverage to support whatever career you do want to take on. So it's really focusing for the first time on your why, what's your purpose, and what's your new identity? What's your end of your movie look like?
That's great. And for listeners, in the show notes for this episode at beyondtheuniform.org, I'll add a link to a couple episodes. One is episode 223 with Peter Docker. Peter is the number two person at Simon Sinek's company that is all about start with why. So I love, you're speaking that language. I love that. And so if you want to dig deeper in this thought of starting with a why, that's a great episode to look at. And then there's another one with Andy Chan, who is the director of career management at Stanford Business School. He has a lot of great information related to what you're saying. And then lastly, the interview that will be published after this one. So the next episode is with a lady, Lita Citrone, who does a lot of work around personal branding. And so be sure to look at that, because what Natalie's talking about here, this thought of, you know, you brand a product, you brand a company, you brand a service, you brand people as well. And thinking through, what is your brand? What makes you different? What makes you stand apart? Like, what are your values and how do you communicate that efficiently? It takes time, and there's great organizations like Military Talent Partners to help you think through that. But as my wife is always saying, it takes time to save time. And if you are willing to put in the time up front, it'll pay dividends down the road in figuring out what your brand is and what you uniquely have to offer the world and an employer.
So true. We're so spun up on what we're doing now and what we need to do and what we've always done. And that must be who we should always be. But your personal brand is all about who you will be, who you will become, and telling the world what you do and how you're different. That's it. So once you get that, once you could commit to that focus, it's all downhill from there.
That's great. Well, I always like to end with an open-ended question, and that is, and for listeners, I'll have links to Military Talent Partners in the show notes. I'll have links to everything we discuss. Glassdoor, which is a great resource, completely free salary information for different titles, companies, geographic areas. I'll have links to all of those in the show notes. But Natalie, what would you like to leave listeners with before we wrap up?
I am a huge fan of Jesse Itzler. I'm lucky enough to be mentored by him right now in a Build Your Life Resume course. And one thing that he said to me that really shook me, and it makes me emotional to even think back to it, but he said with such passion, you didn't come this far to only come this far. You didn't come through everything you accomplished in the military to just drop the mic and walk away. This is just the beginning of everything you've ever wanted. And if you've done all that you already have, you can do anything. All it takes is confidence and the right amount of focus and commitment. And that is it.
That's great. I mean, it harkens back to what you were saying about purpose. And I love that thought of, like, you didn't come this far just to come this far. There is something in store for you. There is something that's going to utilize all your skills and talents. And I hope that makes listeners excited to know whatever comes next, whether you serve for 30 years or 3 years, to know that there is something waiting for you on the other side. And it may take some time to figure it out. But I think that what Natalie's talking about are some concrete steps you can do to uncover that. Like an archaeologist finding the dinosaur bones, you can do the work and figure out what's really important. And that's what's going to drive you to your next chapter, whatever that might be.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Natalie. I appreciate your time and perspective. And for listeners, you can check out more at Military Talent Partners. Links in the show notes. And hopefully listeners are able to take a look and see if that's a good fit for you.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from any of the listeners. You can reach out to us just on about every page of our website. And you can reach out to me directly, natalie@militarytalentpartners.com, or find me on LinkedIn. Happy to help you in any way that I can. That is what we do for a living, and it's what we love. Surface.
Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision-making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.